We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to Inside Mizzou Athletics, presented by Shelter Insurance. Find an agent for your auto, home, and life at shelterinsurance.com. Now, here is your host, Mike Kelly.
Well, welcome to the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast. It's presented by Shelter Insurance. Shelter Insurance, remember, you can choose them for your auto, home, and life. Visit your local agent or find them on the web, shelterinsurance.com. We're your shield, we're your shelter. I'm Mike Kelly. Matt Michaels is alongside. And it's only appropriate that in this day in particular, we have to begin with something a little bit off script, because the famous, the one and only, Steve Sowers, the former Leatherneck from Western Illinois University, is celebrating his 47th birthday today. Happy birthday to you. Okay, that's enough, because we can't sing. So. Anyway, happy birthday to Steve Sowers.
37.
He says. We know better. We've seen the
He got really adamant. You know, Steve has talked about not wanting to talk here. He said, keep a microphone away from me. That's fine. But when you bring up his age, my goodness.
He's still at the point where he cares about what people say the number actually is. He eventually will arrive at the point where it's just happy to be vertical, my friend.
I am upright today.
And to have a birthday to celebrate. Not that I'm in that category. I'm just saying that
I
eventually
would never
we all
accuse you
will.
Of that.
You were the one that made fun of me because of memes last week. Oh, you know what a meme is?
Well, you talk all the time about how I'm not on that Twitter stuff.
Well,
I don't.
Somebody pointed it to my thing, and I still don't understand why people are. Other than it's just a. To me, here's what Twitter is. Twitter's a, oh, look at me. It's the individualization of our society. Oh, look at me. Here I am. Oh, look at me. You know, and I honestly don't see any redeeming values that Twitter has, particularly in this day and age.
The memes are cool.
The one meme about Black Eyed Peas prior to New Year's Day?
That was a good thing to bring up.
I was glad someone shared that with me, to which I think you did not eat Black Eyed Peas.
I am completely fine if you blame it on me. I didn't, but I'm not like a jinxes, curses, superstitious type of person.
So 2021, we'd all hope was going to be better, right? And what happens one week in? Missouri basketball team gets paused because of contact tracing with COVID. Now, as we're speaking on this Wednesday, the 13th of January, we know that they're supposed to resume activities. But as we look around, Vanderbilt, who would have been Missouri's opponent last night, that game wouldn't have been played anyway because Vanderbilt has issues as well. We're seeing other programs now being forced to pause activities. Do we make it to the NCAA tournament?
I think yes. Do we make it to the NCAA tournament on time? That, to me, is the open question.
Yeah.
Because as you start to see more and more teams that are going through COVID issues in the middle of the season, A, I think that if it's being done out of the prudence of keeping people safe, then it is the right thing to do. And I felt that way about college athletics since day one. B, we're starting to see now multiple games for teams that are being rescheduled or potentially lost. We don't know how they'll handle it. Mm-hmm. The SEC has a week at the end of the season to try to make up some games, but if you're going to try to cram three or four games in that week, that's not going to happen. So how many games for everybody do we see played in a regular season is an open question. And for some teams who are probably really close to the NCAA tournament, they're wondering if, man, oh, man, do I get that opportunity against a quad one game that I could really use at the end for the resume? I don't know that any of those questions get answered until literally the final week of the regular year. But I just find it impossible to believe that with all the work people have done to get to this point in the season, that they would cut it short for the NCAA tournament absent some sort of major unforeseen event with the virus that we just cannot anticipate right now.
Yeah, I still think that there's still time in which, and maybe we're seeing the number of delays or postponements or pauses. Maybe that is related to the Christmas holiday and the surge that everyone anticipated, because now what are we, 15 days, something like that, removed from Christmas. And so... You know, does that surge? Only the virus knows, right? I mean, only the virus knows, and we just have to all sit back and, to use words from Matt Michaels, be flexible, and also be grateful for whatever we have the opportunity to see. I'm wondering, as we sit here almost now mid-January, who's the best team in college basketball that you've seen so far?
I think it's hard for me to take it away from Gonzaga, the way that they have performed and performed consistently, right? Like, there was that period of time, and I feel it was about, maybe I'm dating myself, like 10, 15 years ago, where it was, okay, so this is a team that can be dangerous to you in a tournament, but are they at the level of one of the elites in college basketball? And I think what Mark Few's proven is that, yeah, we can do that. We can build ourselves a new arena. We can make ourselves a national brand, and we can clean your clock with a bunch of players from places that maybe some of the blue blood programs in the sport hadn't really considered. They have maximized everything they've had to bear. And of course, at a place like Gonzaga, it is the number one game in town. So that gets the excitement going and gets people pulling in the same direction. I think that they're a testament to when you pull in the same direction, you build yourself a top 10 or top 5 program. I think they've done it. And I think until somebody gets the opportunity to knock them off, which these days is only in the NCAA tournament, it seems, they're the Kings.
Because their game against Baylor was paused because of COVID.
That's right.
It didn't happen because of COVID.
The answer would have been that, yeah, I think, the winner of that game.
And Baylor's probably clearly number two. Yeah. I mean, based on what we've seen, the body of information that we have right now, I agree with you about Gonzaga being right now the team that appears to be the best team in the country. You know, the interesting thing about Mark Few is think about the impactful number of transfers that he's been able to guide all the way to Spokane, Washington. I mean, we were impacted, right? Missouri was. Jonathan Williams III, you know, made his way to Spokane, Washington. I'd suggest that native of Memphis, Tennessee, had never been there before. Andrew Nimhard, now from, you know, the former Florida players up there. I think it speaks to the culture, right? That and really the branding that that Mark Few and Tommy Lloyd and his staff have been able to really, you know, secure over the last, you know, 20 years. It's been fascinating to watch the growth of that program.
And I think, too, that once you've built that, it becomes its own attractant, right? Like you said, how does Jonathan Williams III go from Memphis, Tennessee to Spokane, Washington? How does anybody? You build a brand, you show student athletes that, yes, you can build your brand here too. And by the way, you can be a successful athlete at the next level having come out of Gonzaga. And if you want to win, we're going to win here. We will do that. And when you have that level of momentum rolling, it is awfully difficult to crack. Just ask Nick Saban about that, because people have come at the King in college football for now, what, the better part of 12, 15 years? And the King usually gets the spoils.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the Natty coming up here in a little bit, but I want to stick with hoops, and let's shift a little bit to the SEC. Missouri's scheduled to play on the road coming up on Saturday at Texas A&M. Texas A&M, as we speak on this Wednesday, is on the road at Mississippi State. A week ago, 2 weeks ago, if you would have asked me who's the best team in the SEC, I would have said Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Based on the body of work that we know right now, I think Alabama may be the best team in the league.
Yeah, it's them right now. They have shown the propensity to use their speed and use what Nate Oates wants to get up and down the floor and make you suffer.
Yeah.
Make you suffer as a defense and as a team to try to keep up with them. And I feel like what happened against Kentucky here this week is a subset of a couple of things. Kentucky being a young team, which a lot of people have talked about, like, oh, so much turnover within John Calipari's program. I understand that. But I also, when I've watched Kentucky at times, and I watched that game against Louisville, and I thought, that's a team that doesn't work hard enough to get its shots. Super talented, but didn't seem to put in the extra pass, the extra to get something that looked better than just, well, here's my 16-foot jump shot. And so if the shots aren't falling, you suffer. Or if you have to chase the game, you suffer. And what's Alabama making everybody do? They're making them chase the game.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can do that, and you can do it consistently for 40 minutes, and Missouri has done this at times this season, you make the other guy chase the game, like the Arkansas game is a perfect example of this. They can't do what they want because you have found yourself in the lead and playing, you know, the stiff arm game and keeping them at arm's length. And I think Bama can do that as well as anybody out there when they're on their game, certainly as well as anybody in the league.
Think about it, too. Year two, right? I mean, he inherited some talent. Mm-hmm. He did, no question about it. But in year two, you know, I don't know that most people would have anticipated that they'd have a chance to win the SEC championship in year two. And I'm not saying that others can't do so. I still think that they can. But I just have been impressed with what he's done, you know, early on in his tenure in Tuscaloosa. The Missouri women had an unfortunate situation in that they traveled all the way to Auburn, Alabama, and then found out hours before tip-off that their game was postponed. You know, obviously, I naturally gravitate to the financial implications because, you know, you just paid for a charter. I don't know where you were on busing when you arrived. I don't know where you were in terms of guarantees to the hotel, et cetera, et cetera. So that's, you know, that's something that just is a difficult situation. And you wish the teams wouldn't have to go through that, right?
Right. And if something happens, again, the day of a game or the day before a game, we don't know exactly when the word came down, but we knew as of Sunday the game was off, and they were all the way there on the planes. If it has to happen, it has to happen. And I'm glad that the SEC is backing teams up on it. Like, hey, this is what you have to do. Blame us if you want. It'll be our protocols. Because people get frustrated, and like you said, there's dollars and cents involved. I think now for Mizzou women's basketball, the question that is greater to be answered is, man, they've had a lot of disruptions from the virus this year that have maybe gone unnoticed. Mm-hmm. They started the season, obviously, with getting their preseason time reduced essentially by a couple of weeks because they had to deal with the virus then. They've now lost a couple of games that I'm sure Robin Pinchton would really like to play. I'm not sure that at this point where you're playing league opponents in terms of the time invested together in developing as a team that they have as much as many teams in the league have been able to put in. And as such, it's going to be a work in progress, maybe down until February and March, when I think we'll really start to see who everybody is and this team as well. A lot of talent, a lot of fight, but putting it together, I think, is made more difficult because they've had as stop-start a run of it, I think, as anybody in the SEC on that side.
Yeah, and I think just back to the men's game just for a second, think about St. Louis U.
Man, oh, yeah.
They haven't played since before Christmas and won't play for a solid month, right? It'll be late January before they tee it back up. And so, it just, again, underscores that, you know, the diseases or the virus is still in control. We're going to talk football. A lot to talk about still there, and the national championship unfolded on Monday night. The SEC wins another national championship. We'll talk about that and more coming up next on the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast, presented by our friends at Shelter Insurance.
Family first. My dad used to tell us that all the time. But family first wasn't just something he'd say to us. It was how he lived every day of his life. And it's how I try to live mine, too. at Shelter Insurance. Our agents are dedicated to helping provide personalized auto, home, and life protection that puts your family first. Shelter Insurance. We're your shield. We're your shelter.
We continue on the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast. I'm Mike Kelly. Matt Michaels is alongside. Reminder, we're presented by Shelter Insurance. Remember, Shelter Insurance for your auto, home, and life. Visit your local agent or find them on the web, shelterinsurance.com. We're your shield. We're your shelter. Alabama claims its sixth national championship under Nick Saban, its 18th national championship in school history with a dominant performance on Monday night. Did you expect it to be that big of a blowout?
No, not that big of a blowout.
I didn't either.
I did expect Alabama to win, right, and I expected them in the end to win comfortably, but not that comfortably. Not to come out and trade a couple of blows with Ohio State, right, and then put up a 28-point second quarter. Didn't think that would happen, even with all the talent on the field. And I think what that tells you is Devontae Smith, before he left that game, was on some sort of heroic level performance. I mean, when the stats end, 12 catches for 215 and three scores, and basically all of it was done in the first half, you look at that and say, how does this become possible against an Ohio State team that had to know that the Heisman Trophy winner was on the other side? And I feel that the way that they did it was indicative of how Nick Saban and Steve Sarkisian ran that offense all season long. They found different ways to get talent in space. They gave that talent the ball in space and let them do things with it. And then if there was any other sort of breakdown, they trusted Mac Jones to find the open man. And it's what happened the entirety of that game. And I think the game would have looked different if Trey Sermon for Ohio State would not have gotten hurt early and had to leave the game. But I don't think it made a material impact on the fact that Alabama was winning that game by a couple of scores. It just underscored in the end that when they are on their best, who beats Alabama?
Right. And particularly with a defense that by Alabama standards is probably just a little bit above average, mm-hmm, right? Not a great defense. And even Nick Saban said that afterwards. This is not one of our great defensive teams. Very young. You know, obviously they battled through a lot of injuries, but players that needed to step up in the national championship game, particularly Christian Barmore, Patrick Surtain, and others, played extremely well. Here's the question that I wished our friends in the media would have asked afterwards to both Coach Saban and also Ryan Day. 12 for – what was the number 12 for –
12 for 215 and 3.
And 3 in, yeah, the first half. Because, again, he did not have a reception in the second half because, mm-hmm, he on the first drive of the second half is when he dislocated the
finger.
That's right. The question I wish would have been posed afterwards, how many think he would have had if he had played the entire game? Think about that.
Yeah.
It could have been one of the most – it was already a historic night by BCS standards.
Yeah.
Think about what he could have done to the national record books had he stayed in for a full four quarters of football. The numbers could have been astounding.
If that's what Saban, Sarkisian, and Devontae Smith wanted, that's what they would have gotten.
Mm-hmm.
I think of the goal line play where they ran Devontae Smith three different motions behind, right, the line of scrimmage just to wear out, just to A, identify the man that's on him,
the back, yeah,
and B, wear him out.
Yeah.
And then at the time of the snap, Smith knows which ways he's going to, yeah, go, and he knows he can win a foot race, and all Jones has, yeah, to do is pitch him the ball. And this is not something that's new for them. Like, we saw this in the game against Missouri. What do? They found their talent in space, oftentimes behind the line of scrimmage, and just said, go get me 10, 15 yards. The reason why Alabama against Missouri, I think, averaged, you know, on those short passes, 10, 11, 12 yards, is because they just found the fast guy in space, and it's so difficult to cover him when they know what they're doing and you don't, and you have to react. If you just don't have the speed and the space, it's very hard to do.
What a testimony to the collective makeup of team, mm-hmm, that word team, that national championship, their drive to a title this season embodied the word team. All those guys came back because they wanted to do what? They wanted to win an SEC championship, but more importantly, they wanted to win a national championship. That's why Devontae Smith waited a year. That's why others waited a year. Landon Dickerson, you know, Leatherwood, Alex Leatherwood, the tackle, all those guys, because they came back with a singular goal in mind, and that was to win the national championship. So I love the fact that you can still have that, right? That you can have people that collectively bond together, and it's not about the I, you know, it's about the we and about the team effort. And to me, that's something that you'll remember. This Alabama fans in particular will remember this team. And the other thing, too, I think it was very important that Nick Saban pointed this out. They accomplished something no other Alabama team or no other national championship team did. Played 11 games in the SEC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that on its own has people wondering, and I have wondered, if it's the greatest college football team that we've seen in this modern era. And I know it's difficult to compare to dynasties of prior years. The game was a different game. But that we've seen, I guess the other argument would be, well, if LSU was the greatest maybe offense ever assembled last season, how does this Alabama team stack up? And how I feel is that this Alabama team, like you said, Mike, was definitely a team. And let's not forget this either. Nick Saban, from the beginning of the year, not saying any other college coach did not, but he understood how this virus could throw all of this for a loop for his team.
Right.
They had up in their weight room from the summer. It was wear your mask, stay distant, do all these things, because they realized that could be a problem. And I felt at a time during the summer that the team that dealt with the virus the best was going to be the national champion. I'm not saying Alabama was the best, but did anybody miss much significant time that was a key contributor on that team due to the virus? I don't know if it's a chicken or the egg thing, but it didn't end up happening, did it? Mm-hmm. I think that they dealt with that, and Saban realized it was a threat to what they did, and it might have energized him too. Like, now you hear people saying, well, Nick Saban seems like he wants to coach for a while, and unfortunately for Missouri and everybody in the SEC, if he's sticking around, he sets the standard.
Yeah, Malachi Moore might have been out the last couple of weeks because of that. They never really did describe what the freshman's nature of his injury was. Of course, they lost battle in the second half of the game because of the targeting penalty. But it's just fascinating to see what they were able to accomplish. And in terms of, was this the best offense ever? I mean, if the standard bearer is LSU, then I'm going to say, yes, Alabama had the best offense ever. Why am I saying that? Because LSU played four non-conference opponents.
Mm-hmm.
They played four non-conference opponents. Those numbers are skewed by those non-conference figures. You know, let's look at just the conference-only numbers if you're going to compare, do the comparison. I just believe that across the board, this was the best offense that we've seen. Now here's the interesting thing, and you talked about Saban. I thought it was interesting afterwards, or Tuesday morning. When was it? Tuesday morning, the news conference. How long did you take to celebrate, and when did the process of getting ready for next year begin? Well, the process began, the to-do list started after the game. I've already had conversations with several players that have got decisions to make. Those decisions or those discussions will continue as we get back to Tuscaloosa and into the coming weeks. So he's already thinking about number eight. And here's some remarkable numbers. Last 12 seasons at Alabama. Nick Saban, 6 national titles, 7 SEC titles, and an overall record of 151-15. Who's playing for second every year? That's the question you got to start. You need to begin with.
Well, right? when they win 90% of their games, it has to be especially frustrating for. And I think we've seen some of the turnover in. The Western Division, right?
Well, no.
Let's
pause there.
Yeah.
How about the turnover just on his own doggone staff?
Well, that's
each
a good
and
point,
every
too.
Year.
Yeah. And turnover that he will have again with finding a new offensive coordinator from somewhere. And he's created something that people want to be a part of, right? We talked about Gonzaga. Saban's done it the same way with coaches, with bright and brilliant minds who have come there and he said, work for me. Let's make this thing really good. And then he of all of them, I think, is not afraid about having a coach go somewhere else because he knows he can get someone who's very good to replace that coach. It is very difficult to be an SEC team and try to topple that. I feel like what you have to do is aspire to the level where you can get competitive week in and week out in the SEC. And then when you get your shots against the Alabamas of the world, you just hope you can make it that day and see what occurs from that spot. And And Missouri will have their shots against Alabama. They had their shot on the field in 2014 against the Crimson Tide. But we see when they're on their game and they want it, they are very difficult to top.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, in terms of staff, I mean, just you think of the reclamation projects, right, that have, mm-hmm. that have come to Alabama to, you know, learn from the GOAT, the greatest of all time, and to rehab their image. Lane Kiffin comes to mind, head coach at the University of Mississippi. Butch Jones comes to mind, new head coach at Arkansas State. Sark heading to Texas. You got others that are sitting there, you know, that are analysts right now, from Major Applewhite to Mike Stoops to others. It's just, it's, you know, look at Mike Locksley, who, again, you know, mm-hmm. does he get the head coaching job at Maryland if he doesn't spend time at the University of Alabama? And I'd suggest he probably doesn't. You know, it's fascinating to see how he's been able to bring these guys back in. Certainly they learn a lot about organization and structure mm-hmm. and work ethic and things like that, and then get a chance to go run their own programs. And he still beats them.
Mm-hmm.
Just ask Kirby Smart.
Yeah. And is there a day when a ride like that ends? Inevitably there is.
Sure.
I mean, I think of the Nebraska Cornhuskers and what that used to mean.
Yeah, but
once,
you know,
upon
what?
A time.
Yes.
It's a different structural thing, but
they got over their skis,
yeah.
right at Nebraska. They had a guy that was winning 90% or 75% of his mm-hmm. games, whatever it was, that Frank Solich did, and it wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
Understand who you are.
Yeah, the point of me saying that is it comes to an end, right? And we don't know exactly when it does. A lot of people will say, well, the moment Nick Saban walks out that door, I'm not so sure of that. And there will be probably structural changes, I think, to the sport in terms of the playoff and giving more access. And when you give other teams that are good chances on the field, you have more exposure and more chances to get there. And the way we count it in college football is once you win the big game, you're the team. You are those dudes. LSU were those dudes last year. And then Alabama said, no, we are this year. And they've proven over time that that's the standard to set in the sport right now. And someday it comes to an end, but we don't know when it is. It doesn't seem to be anytime soon. So all you can do until then is aspire to be approaching that.
And the interesting thing is they didn't make the playoffs, right? They lost two games, lost to Auburn a year ago, lost to LSU, had four critical turnovers in the LSU game. Could make the argument they might have been the best team a year ago had they not lost the LSU game. But, you know, they did, and LSU was terrific and went on to win a national championship. To your point, though, and you just mentioned it a moment ago, think about the impact. So we've talked about the pandemic a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about the impact it's had on college athletics. The greatest thing for expansion, the greatest tool for expansion, maybe the pandemic.
Yeah.
Because why? Because people need cash. And this is the opportunity to really increase the financial model, if you will, of the bowl championship and what conferences can get in return by expanding the playoffs. And it may be driven by this, by the pandemic. And you can mm-hmm. you can use other things, right? You can use other things. Yeah, you know, Cincinnati deserves a chance. Yeah, UCF a couple years ago, you know, deserved a chance. Well, whatever you want to say, that's fine. But, you know, if ever there was a time when people are looking at deficits internally within their department, you know, it may be something to drive decisions. However, it was also interesting that on Tuesday morning after the recap, if you will, mm-hmm. the meeting of the BCS folks, everybody was really quick to say, all committee members were really quick to say, oh, no, we never talked about expansion.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well,
see.
That's the sort of thing you don't talk about until you do, right? Like
yeah.
in some sort of official context. I think, too, that the sport of college football has become so much about winning the championship and maybe less to some fans about following the story that you really run a risk of you have the same 4, 6, 8 teams that have a chance every year, you diminish interest in the sport.
Ratings were down this year.
From places, correct. Yeah. That the ratings were higher for the semifinal games because
right.
there was intrigue there than the championship game, which folks thought, well, you know. And other things have occurred to maybe divert attention and interest in different ways. I understand that, too. But you run a risk of having the same 4, 6, 8 teams at the top every year. If you don't get new blood in there, and if people who make up and fan bases who make up a lot of the sport, a majority of the sport, don't feel they have a chance, then you're going to have a problem too. And I think access to the playoff is is a way to keep people interested for longer in their teams so they have a chance for upward mobility because there isn't much right now.
Yeah. You know, the other thing, too, that I think you got to figure out if you're college football, if we're looking at different things to correct, we both love the sport, right? Got to figure out a way to play it in a quicker amount of time.
Yeah.
It's got to be done in a more timely manner. There are ways that I think you can change just little subtle things with the game that can make it less than 4.5 hours, like I think the Mississippi State game was this year. You know, I think that's something you have to address to keep interest of the fans, number one. Number two, the other thing, too, like how do you make bowl games more interesting for players, not for fans? I think we're at a point in time that players, particularly the ones that have the opportunity to play at the next level, if you're not in the semifinals, then it's just an exhibition. Why should I play? And, you know, you can make the argument, and I've talked to former coaches that have said, I've never had a player that got injured in a bowl game that it impacted his professional career. That's fine, but that's not the mentality that's driving folks right now. It's, hey, it's a glorified exhibition. So how do you make the bowl games more appealing to the players? And I think that's a challenge.
Yes, I agree with you. It is a
Maybe
real challenge.
Name, likeness, image comes into play.
I think that would be a very wise way, and we know that has been a table discussion at the moment, even though there are some deadlines set, and the NCAA said just this past week, well, we're going to move this to another time. I get that. But the sooner you deal with that and the sooner you give the student athletes the opportunity to make that something that is worth an investment of their time, and it's an investment of somebody's money, don't get me wrong. But when you figure that out, I think you do help the sport because you give those best of the best an opportunity to make the collegiate experience something that is valued and is valued, like you said, all the way through because right now, there's a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow for the best of the best. And if you're in that scenario, and if any human being was in that scenario, Mike, said, okay, all you have to do is reduce your risk until a few months from now, and you're going to get a payday that will change your life. How many people are going to say, nah, you know what, I'll take the risk? It doesn't make sense to a lot of them. And to your point with the bowl games, I think that's what some of the student athletes who are in that spot are making that decision regarding.
And yeah, I just think it's something that There are a lot of different things that I think you can do to help the sport, you know, and, you know, when it comes to the bowl games themselves, making them more than just an exhibition in the minds of the players, I think is something that would help moving forward. Thinking about just, you know, looking at the players that play in the national championship game, you know, obviously you're going to see a lot of those players in the next level. I read an interesting story today about Mac Jones faces an interesting decision. If he's not in the top 15, if he's not in the first round, does he come back to Alabama? Imagine that. I don't think he does, but that was a story that I read today. We know Nick Bolton has made it clear that he's not coming back. I don't know that we have a complete list. We've seen kind of some trickling out from Missouri that are going to come back. Kiki Chisholm, Mike Maietti, Hazleton, I don't believe will be back.
No.
So I don't know. It's just the extra year of eligibility is going to be, I think, fascinating for everybody. We've talked with coaches about how you balance rosters, how you recruit, et cetera, et cetera. But 2020 is going to be intriguing, or 2021 is going to be intriguing in terms of what happens with name likeness and image, what happens with the one-time transfer rule as those two things eventually get rolled out. You know, there's been a lot of talk about does the Power Five separate? And there was something that Pete Thamel wrote today on Yahoo that I found interesting. It was something I hadn't thought about. In order for the Power Five to separate from the NCAA, who has to agree to that? The conference commissioners. And guess what? Then you get into a situation where the conference commissioners are basically out of jobs, right? You start seeing a lot of redundancy in positions. So that's something that, again, it was a point I hadn't thought about that Pete Thamel you know, wrote about this morning.
Yeah, I hadn't considered that, and I think that if something like that was to occur, and I know that there's been plenty of talk about it, you would still need to have someone at the head of that organization that can be a strong leader, because, like you said, if there are a bunch of conference commissioners with understandably competing interests while having a common interest, they all want to win, right? Everybody wants to be the best, and it seems very difficult to say, okay, we have four or five or however many co-equal partners in this Power Five group without having someone at the top that is appointed as someone who can settle the disputes and be kind of the peacemaker and be the leader of that group. I think that any setup that would look like that would not have to look like the NCAA in structure or financially or any of that. But I think one thing that they would have to have is somebody who everybody could point to and say, that's the leader of this organization. And one that by mutual consent, they all agree to, because otherwise, right. My fear is that some of the stuff you saw this year with everybody's going their own direction and nobody communicates when it comes to the virus. I mean, that just bubbles up more if you don't have that in place.
Cutfield, do we see a return to normalcy? 21? Are we still social distancing with fans in 21 when we move into the fall? What does Matt Michaels' gut say on that? And I'll give you my opinion. Mm-hmm. I think we're still social distance to a degree.
Yeah.
I think the other thing, too, that is going to be fascinating to watch is how many fans come back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. I think we will probably be some version of social distancing. Masks may be around for another season. Until epidemiologists say, no, this is not something you got to worry about because enough people have been vaccinated and we've got this kicked in a corner. I mean, you can do that, but it takes a lot of time. And I don't know if there's enough time between now and the fall to say, all right, everything's going to be completely back to normal. 2 years from now, I would hope so. I think so. But my gut tells me we'll still have a little bit of this. And you're right. When that day does come, how many of the fans come back and in what numbers? I think there will be a great outpouring, Mike, of people who want to be there in person again and who want to have that experience, who maybe have been sitting on the sidelines for that. The question will be, can you sustain that initial surge and keep it interesting and keep it unique? And I think college sports is going to be dealing with that as its next big question after it deals with some of the stuff that it looks like it will over the next year.
Monday on Tiger Talk, we took a different route, right, because basketball was mm-hmm. in quarantine. Talked to Brian Smith, head coach of the 10th-ranked wrestling team, win number 300. Also visit with our friend Josh Taylor. And as I sat back and I reflected on the hour I had, half an hour, 27 minutes with both those guys, mm-hmm. I just thought about just how fortunate, right, Mizzou is to have two quality individuals, not only good coaches, but quality individuals. One in a veteran coach who's got a proven body of work. The other in a very sharp, dynamic young coach who talked about how much, when he first arrived as an assistant, how he wanted to just go up and watch how Brian Smith did things. Just think about how fortunate they are to have two guys like that.
Yeah, I feel that Missouri in those two positions and in positions where Brian Smith has built it, and as we talked to him on the podcast, from nearly nothing compared to what it is today,
near
into what it is
extinction.
Today. Yeah,
near extinction.
I think that's fair to say.
Yeah.
And for Joshua Taylor to have been a part of a program so successful under Wayne and Susan Kreklo and to take it now to where he says, I see what we can build upon. Let's go to new heights. And to be so articulate in the way that he wants to accomplish that and to get the buy-in from everybody in such short a time. And, oh, by the way, have the results. And we'll see what the spring portion of this weird season for volleyball has in store for that. I think that they are two coaches that Missouri should feel very fortunate to have. And oh, by the way, would be remiss in saying here anything but a hearty congratulations to Brian Smith for win number 300.
Right.
And by the way, he's so excited about his team. He told me, like, I wake up at, or where I was before the season, I was waking up at 4 a.m. and doing a workout because I was so excited I couldn't go back to sleep. He really feels that strongly about his team. And now this weekend, my goodness, they've got three other nationally ranked teams they face up at Ames, Iowa, at a quad duel at Iowa State. And if they came out of that one, Mike, looking as rosy as they have in the early season, even if they took a dual loss somewhere in there, if they get the sort of nationally ranked individual wins, all of a sudden you're going to be talking about Missouri wrestling, you know, top five level program again. And it will not have been by anybody's surprise, certainly not to the head coach.
Yeah.
But that's what I think is on the line for them this
weekend. Yeah, he even said, you know, that this is like basically you know, second day of the NCAA tournament stuff, what they're going to face this weekend.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, it's neat to see. When do your baseball boys get underway?
It is in the process of really getting kick-started over there. The 19th, as far as I know, is still the opening date across the NCAA. They haven't changed that. In terms of scheduling and things, that is still being worked out. There had been reports that all the SEC head coaches had met on a call and said, as of now, we want to keep the schedule the way it has been. Some college baseball conferences are not doing that. They are having increased conference games or limiting non-conference or changing the structure of their weekends. And some had surmised that maybe the SEC would do something like that. But as of now, the understanding is, a 56-game schedule that they absolutely want to play. But in the manner that it has been before, three games a weekend over 10 weekends and then fit in non-conference where you can. But I think there still is some to be signed off on there. And when they get it started, I can tell you this, it's going to be the greatest assemblance of talent that the college baseball world has seen because of the circumstances surrounding the season. You had a draft in Major League Baseball that only lasted a handful of rounds, five rounds.
Mm-hmm.
And what a testament, by the way, to Ian Bedell of the University of Missouri to be selected in one of those five rounds by the St. Louis Cardinals. But you got a bunch of players coming back and a bunch of players finding new places with expanded rosters in a situation that sees a lot of people who thought they'd be playing professional baseball, quite frankly, in this upcoming season, back to the college game. I think the SEC games are going to be absolutely wild this season. I think Missouri can compete with anybody in the league right now. Give them the time and give them the opportunity, and let's see what happens. I think it's going to be great.
Yeah, and I'm interested to see what takes place, right? I think the world of Steve and really have enjoyed over the last year getting to know him, you know, more and more. I find it amazing, too, that he's able to do what he's doing given the facilities that he has. I mean, it's no secret he's got the worst stadium in the SEC. And, you know, being able to attract top-line talent, you know, and guys that have a chance to be future pros, you know, with that kind of, you know, handcuff, if you will, he's going to be a guy that, you know, when you get a full-size indoor practice facility for football, that benefits everybody else, right?
Mm-hmm.
In particular, baseball and softball. And so, you know, it'll be interesting down the road as he continues to have success, when and if there's ever a decision to help maybe build a new facility. Because it's just by standards, it just doesn't measure up, right?
Yeah,
because you've been to all those facilities,
with the exception of the new one in Starkville, which hopefully I don't know for sure, but hopefully there's a chance to go this year. The Tigers were slated to go there last season before it all ended. Yeah. You're right; it is not the same type of facility. It is not the same caliber of facility. There are some older facilities in the league, but they find themselves with frequent upgrades. On the players' side, on the student-athlete side, they don't want for much. The clubhouse is great. They have great facilities, and the investment in technology mm-hmm. that Steve Beazer has made a cornerstone of his program
right.
is awesome. Is awesome and is state of the art what is going on. But in terms of amenities for fans, in terms of the feel around the ballpark, you're right. It does not measure up with going to the box on a Friday night in Baton Rouge. It's not the same experience. One thing I can say, knowing Steve Beazer pretty well, is he wants to build that out.
Right.
It is his intention to be a builder of those sorts of experiences and those sorts of things, not just for his team, but for the fans. And it is something that occupies his mind. It is not something that he leaves to somebody else.
Right.
And it is something that I believe, given the time and the opportunity, and oh yeah, the success that I feel is coming to this program on the field, that will happen at the University of Missouri if it stays the course.
Yeah, I can remember when I was in athletics and when they did what's currently constructed as, you know, going from Simmons Field to Taylor Stadium
mm-hmm.
and asking questions at the time, why are we staying there? Why is it moved to a different part of the sports park to allow for easier access for the fans and for parking and things like that? And there just wasn't the tools or the wherewithal at this point in time. And you talk about players not wanting for much, you know, to this day, you know, if I would see, you know, Gene McCarter, I remember when he was in, you know, administration, here at Missouri and you know, overseeing, you know, bowl trips and things like that, mm-hmm. and saying, Coach, if you didn't operate on a baseball budget, this would be a nice, a much nicer hotel that we're staying at right now. Mm-hmm. Things like that. So, yeah, they aren't people that by nature aren't people that want much. Just, you know, give me a ball, give me a bat, let's go play. And so, anyway, it's just, I'm excited for, and Larissa Anderson's going to have a good team too. And
I think she's going to have a really good
team.
Yeah,
it's going to be neat to see, and hopefully, without a hitch, those things happen as well. Mm-hmm. Had enough for the day?
Yeah, sure, if you've had enough. I mean, we've had a good back and forth here. I didn't bloody an eye or anything like that. So, you know.
Oh,
you were
tame today. No, you were tame. No shots about hair.
No.
No shots about age. Which
no.
Which was good. Did we say that Steve Sowers was celebrating 47 today?
Yes, that's what we said.
We said, yeah. I have to go to Facebook to see if it's true.
I mean, we,
you know, you're on social media. You'll
yeah,
figure that out.
I will check social media to see if it's factual.
Great
That's
to see
right.
you.
Good to see you.
Thanks for listening to the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast presented by Shelter Insurance. Remember, shelter for your auto, home, life. Visit your local agent. Find them on the web, shelterinsurance.com. Wear your shield. Wear your shelter. For Matt Michaels, I'm Mike Kelly. Our thanks to the birthday boy, Steve Sowers. And remember to check us out on the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast and subscribe today. Have a great week.
This has been Inside Mizzou Athletics with Mike Kelly, brought to you by Shelter Insurance. Find an agent for your auto, home, and life at shelterinsurance.com. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.